Bring it back.
Welcome to the Endurance Town USA Project. This podcast, along with our blogs, vlogs, and adventure team, travel around the USA both creating and sharing the stories of human beings, changing lives and communities through endurance sports and outdoor adventure. Follow us by subscribing today to reconnect and rediscover your own why as we explore the people and the places that make the endurance lifestyle where we call home. This is Endurance Town USA.
Bring it back.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Great. How are you, Samantha?
So good. Welcome to the Endurance Town USA podcast, my friend.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been an exciting journey, yours and I together. You know, we were introduced by another adventure endurance loving friend, our friend Mary. Shout out to Mary.
Yes.
And have been chatting on and off now for, I think, a couple years, maybe even pre-pandemic. What?
Yes. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is a little bit. And I'm super excited because we're like-minded humans that love all things endurance and adventure. And we actually get to be together relatively soon in February. Yes. In Big Bend in Texas on one of your trips. So finally, we will have our reunion and it will be it will be a good one.
Yeah. Were we ever at the Trans Rockies run
at the same
together?
Time? No.
Nope.
Okay, yeah, we landed a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
And life just got in the way for a myriad of reasons, as that does happen. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to spending some time with you and your team there and seeing firsthand, you know, what Top Out really it looks and feels like.
Yeah.
And maybe really sharing a couple cold beers.
We will have cold beers. We have really good food. I'm looking forward to having you and David there. It's going to be a fun trip.
Awesome. Well, let's get started and tell our audience a little bit about who you are. So first, I'd like to dig into your backstory. Sure. If you can tell me, where were you born and raised? And, you know, what was it look like? What was it looking like when you were a young lad?
Young lad. So I was born in Nashville, Tennessee. People always say you don't sound like you've got an accent. And I just tell them, you know, my English teacher mother beat it out of me, but get me drunk and it'll come out.
It comes right back. That's awesome. Yeah.
I grew up there, lived there all the way through college at Vanderbilt University. And then met my wife there and started our life moving around and living in the U.S. and Mexico from there. So yeah, Nashville, Tennessee is home.
Nashville. Okay. Do you play any musical instruments? I mean, you kind of have to if you're from Nashville. I'm just saying.
I mean, guess so,
anything.
Yeah.
Harmonica, banjo. I'm just throwing it out there.
I will admit to my band geek days as a trombone player.
I knew it.
Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome. Okay. Just checking if you were going to play something around the bonfire when we were out in Texas together.
No, I will spare everyone.
So did you play sports when you were growing up? Was that a part of your lifestyle?
It was. I always seemed to find the odd sports. I mean, there was some baseball in there, a little football in young days, but then I got hooked on lacrosse, which, you know, Nashville, Tennessee is not exactly the hotbed for lacrosse. But I remember Coach Bear showed up in our school and wanted to start a club team. And I went out on a Saturday morning and was hooked. So that was what I did in high school and just loved every moment of it and still get to coach whenever I'm in town for local girls team and continue that. So that was my high school athletics for the most part. It was all around lacrosse.
Okay. And there's some running involved in that. So you had to already have some running prowess or at least a little bit of skill.
Yes. Yeah. Obviously it's a big field. You know, kind of, if you don't know it, you combine kind of the size of a soccer field with the basketball type of plays. And so, yes, a lot of running. I will admit I was not the, running was not my favorite part of it. It was still the, you know, running is the punishment kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I played midfield for one season. You know, your first season, it's a lot more running and defense. But if you have good stick skills, you tend to move into the offensive side on that side of the field and you stay on that side of the field. So I spent the entire offseason on my stick skills so I would not have to go back and play midfield again.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. So you didn't play that in after high school?
No, college. I got my you know what handed to me a couple times with the Vanderbilt team. So those were some serious players, and it just didn't fit what I wanted to do, and there wasn't a future in it for me. So college was there was a lot of mountain biking in there, both a little trail, a lot more just urban biking. Terrorizing the sidewalks and finding where the skateboarders were hanging out and doing stuff on bikes in college. But college there was not a whole lot of athletic background there until I got to grad school. And there's a theme, I guess, as I think about this. So Nashville, not much with lacrosse. I went to school in Illinois, so I took up rock climbing because there's nowhere to climb or rock climb in Illinois.
Indoor gym.
Yeah. So there was a gym close to my lab. Yeah. And I went 6-7 nights a week.
Wow.
Just you went all I needed was like my shoes and just stop by and climb for a couple hours. And so
fantasize about real rocks.
Exactly. Yeah. But I enjoyed the puzzle part of it and that kind of thing. And, but my hands, I remember my wife complained about my hands on our wedding day because they were all, calloused up. Yeah. Yep.
And the two of you together, did you then build a life of adventure? I know you did quite a bit of traveling. Mm-hmm.
Yes. We did. We had our first job in 4 or 5 years into that, took us to Monterrey, Mexico. So my wife, she's not an endurance athlete, but she has a very adventurous spirit. She's a rock star. She moved to Mexico 6 months pregnant with our first daughter.
What? Yeah, she is a rock star.
Yes. So Monterrey, Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah. And so both of our daughters were born while we lived in Monterrey. And that was an incredible chapter for us to live outside of the U.S., period. And wonderful experiences from the, the work parties and meeting those families, to the people we met, in and around the places we lived. It's just incredible experience there. And the big part of our lives. And I'm proud that our daughters have this mental framework that they were born outside of the U.S.
Yeah.
It's like the U.S. is not the end all and be all. Nope. So that's been a big part. Now, if I could get them to speak a lick of Spanish, that would
Can
be great.
They?
No.
So they're not bilingual?
No.
Are you or your wife bilingual?
Yes. Okay. I am. I get by. I don't know, fluent's not the right word. But my wife and I say, between the two of us, we speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. So when we're together, we can kind of work together.
Figure it out. Yeah. One can, interpret it and hear, and one can speak it, or some kind of combination thereof.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So you had one daughter there, or both of them were born there?
Both of them were born there.
Wow. And,
we had, it's Mexico, right? So you have help in the house. We had this wonderful lady who's still a friend, who still calls our girls on their birthdays and everything. We're like, I don't know how people do this without somebody like Dahlia helping them. Let's have the second before we leave.
Mm-hmm. So, exactly.
Her name's Dahlia, and she was a great influence on us and our girls. Pretty special to have her.
Mm, that's so wonderful. And why you were down there for work? So at some point you decided to leave. Was that a work transition then?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I made a good personal friend who led into another business opportunity that took us back to Dallas, where we live now.
Okay. And what did you do for a living at this point in your life?
So I was in manufacturing operations.
Okay.
Running manufacturing plants and then building some, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Doing the business. doing the business, Dave. Did you find that it was a challenge, whether between work and work commitments and family commitments, to keep adventure in your life or any kind of sports?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, and you know, if that is probably some of my lowest athletic periods were those late 20s and early 30s, because
you were adulting, career, Dave. You were adulting.
I was adulting. Yeah. Career was huge. All the family. We managed to have a lot of adventures with, you know, obviously living in Mexico and being in a foreign country, but no, there was not much athletic going on at that period.
Yeah. And it's kind of a tricky thing for all people, you know, like there is this life balance, whether you started out athletic and then, you know, you started the adulting phase where responsibilities around jobs or families and all that kind of stuff comes into play. It is a tricky dynamic to keep that in your life, but we know how important it is because of your physical and emotional health is, you know, directly tied to your physical activity, whatever that type of activity is. And then, of course, role modeling it for your kids and for the people that worked with you and all the people around you in your life, your friends and family and that kind of stuff. You know, it's so important to keep it in there somehow, squeeze it in there somehow. So you left and you went back to Texas and you transitioned your career path. Did you find that you were able to bring endurance activities or even adventures back into your life?
Yeah. And that's really where the endurance bug started to kick in.
Okay.
I mentioned my friend that I met in Monterey and that led to the work opportunity. He was also a runner. And he was more the marathon runner, you know, so distance stuff. And I remember a meal, we were having lunch, you know, Sunday after church, we're sitting at our usual spot and he's talking about something hurts, you know, his hips are hurt or something. And I had been running just a little bit at that time. And he said, I said, well, how far did you run? And he, 14 miles. So to me at that time, I was like, well, there's your problem right there. You know, don't do that and you'll feel fine.
Stop that behavior, young man.
So that was my mindset at the time. But
traditional Western mindset.
Yeah, exactly. But I do also think it was a kind of a, that was the start of a snowball. Even that conversation, just kind of thinking, okay, well, you know, 6 miles is not the end of the possibilities. You know, my buddy's running 14, you know, and it just started to grow from there. And so we moved back to the States and I did my first marathon, I think the first year we'd gotten back. And so, you know, very traditional trajectory there of hire a coach, figure out how to get through a marathon. Don't make your target time. So, you know, sign up the next day for another one and try to do it. And so I did marathons for 4 or 5 years.
Around Texas?
Yeah. Those were all in Texas. Austin has an incredible marathon.
Okay.
The Dallas marathon. So yeah, there were some really good ones, but again.
All road, all flat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All road, all flat. Well, that's Texas. No, there is some hills in Texas.
There are some hills. We'll show them to you in
February. I'm going to see some pretty soon. Yes. Yeah. You're going to take me up some mountains. So road running marathon specifically.
Yep.
Kind of got you in the game. I mean, yes. In the endurance game, that is.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I had a friend and a neighbor who actually I met on the street at like 5 a.m. because he was running. Going out to run and I was going out to run. I mean, I would say coincidental, but it's really not. We were two guys living in suburbia with jobs who needed to go running at 5 a.m. And it was just very natural. So we got to know each other and he brought me, and this is going to date me, a DVD of the Trans Rockies promo.
Uh-huh.
So this was,
I used to have that same DVD.
Exactly.
That's so hilarious. I love it. Shout out to those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good marketing.
So he said, we got to sign up for that. And he never signed up. but
he tricked
so I did
you.
That. Yeah. But that was definitely my introduction into trail running. And, you know, like many people, you get out on the trails and like, well, this has been here the whole time. What? Yeah. So that was my introduction to trail running and going doing that. And then of course the stage racing concept. So that was the beginning. And from there, it went into more traditional races, stuff around Dallas, you know, 50 milers and things like that.
I love how you call that traditional. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. Well,
I know we do have this warped idea, but most of society's like, I'm sorry, excuse me, did you say 5-0? Or did you mean 5K, Dave?
Yeah.
It's not traditional, but so ultra running, you started to discover. So you actually did stage racing first, mm-hmm. and then you went into ultras, which is anything longer than a marathon distance,
right.
traditionally off road, but not necessarily. There is some stuff on cement these days where they do ultras, but yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, what was your experience like at Trans Rockies though? Did you do it solo? You weren't on a team?
Yeah, I did it solo. I think the first year I did the 3-day.
Okay.
The day four, when you watch everybody leave, I mean, I was lower than a snake's belly, as my mom would say. And, you know, was immediately signing up to do the 6-day the next year. Literally paid for two entries and texted my friend Narissa and said, guess what you're doing in August?
You're going. Yeah. Yeah. so you had a teammate.
Had a teammate for the first 3 days to 2 days. She broke a foot at the top of Hope Pass.
Oh no.
Is that that's 3-2, I think.
That sucks.
So yeah, we had a pretty miserable, at least for her, descent. And so she was out. So I just got to finish on my own. Of course, they were nice enough to let you go out and do it.
Exactly.
At a time. So, as I came around in Beaver Creek for the finish, my friend Narissa came back from Colorado Springs. There she is in a boot. Didn't know she was coming. Mm-hmm. And she's cheering for me as I came in. That was a lot of fun.
I love it. And so that experience, which is, in case people aren't familiar with our friends at Trans Rockies, and they should be, there's a 3-day and a 6-day event, also encapsulates the camping element and the community piece. So you race every day. That's what a stage race is. You get up every day and you run for a series of days. Sometimes they're 3 days, sometimes they're 6, 7, 8, even up to 10 days. And in between, you have this community element where you camp at night and you eat together and you sit around the fire and you get to know humans, like-minded humans, out in the most amazing places. Because when you're doing a stage race, you can go to incredible places because you're getting there on foot. So most of, you know, humanity won't go to these places. And then you have this support of not only the race staff, but camp teams and medical teams and different things in case you need them, you know, they're always there. And so that kind of peace of mind. But I'd say the community element is incredibly powerful. What was your experience for the first time having that?
It was a wonderful life experience. And you nailed that community experience with like-minded people. And then also you have that, you tend to run with the same group of people every day. Mm-hmm. Not exactly, but just your pace, right?
Yeah.
And so you're going through this really challenging, difficult experience with people that you didn't know a few days before. But now you have a shared bond and you've talked for a few hours while you're suffering together. And that is a really incredible experience to create a bond. And, you know, some of my deepest, closest friends now are people I met along the way. Our friend Mary is one of those.
Exactly.
Yes.
Because you're on that journey together. You know, it's an individual journey. Only you can take the footsteps and make it happen. Only you can do the miles. But this collective community is behind you, supporting you. And also, I think one of the cool elements of stage racing in particular is that anybody is welcome there. So there are people, you and I know, that never run one footstep. They hike the entire thing, which is awesome and amazing. And why the hell shouldn't they be there? Right. And then you have those front of the pack, hardcore pros or elites who are racing to be as fast as possible day after day after day, which is also amazing to be in that energy space. And then all the humans in between, I fall somewhere in the crevices of all of that stuff, you know, but just finishing it and being able to show up to the starting line and make it to the finish line is the glory. You know, it really isn't about who's on the podium, nothing personal, guys, but it's about that shared humanity and all of us being there together, start and finish. you know?
And just that charity humanity part, and you get to meet some people that, you know, for me, just, I get the fanboy. But yet they're just super nice, regular people who happen to be able to run really fast. Mm. You know, I had an incredible experience, stage race in Nepal, the Manaslu trail race. It's an 8-day, but one day, and this, it's a small group. So
is that Chris Gossman who puts that on?
No, it is a Lizzie Hawker race.
Okay.
So, first of all, I got to meet Lizzie and hang with her. And I mean, that's an incredible life experience to get to hear about. And, but then one day we were sitting around at dinner and said, somebody had the idea to have the elites, which were some really cool Nepalese runners, start, along with a few, I guess there were some Europeans in there, start 30 minutes after we did the next day. So it's 30 minutes. And so we all, you know, us pedestrian people go out and we start out along our way. And I'm climbing this hill about 45 minutes in. Here comes Mira Rai, bing, 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 up the hill behind me. She's just happy and having a good time. And I'm like, good job, you know. But to get to see and experience them and run with them. Another day, we all had a stop at a high point and we stopped the clock so you could just rest as long as you want to. And I got to descend with these incredible athletes as they just, you know, stuff that would scare me to death.
Their technical skills are next level.
Their technical skills were so incredible. So that's part of the experience as well, just getting to be with those people because you wouldn't see them. I mean, I see them on the start line. And then maybe if they stick around for a long time afterwards, I see them at the end in regular races. Stage racing is a really cool experience. Besides, you get to go cool places. Yeah, I definitely recommend it.
Agreed, 100%. And, you know, I've never been a fast runner, and that's not a problem. It doesn't bother me. I have no problem if I'm last or whatever the scenario is, as long as I'm finishing the kind of what I started thing. But I think it does make space for actually exploring your limits in a very different way. So what I discovered when I went from traditional road like you and triathlon and then road running and then ultra and then stage racing, I actually got better at stage racing than I was at the others prior, which was really fascinating to me because I was aging, right? Like all the things in life that normally would be occurring, but I was actually getting better. So those kind of races suited my temperament, my body, my physiology, and so forth. So I was able to, and I'm still able to play at going up 53 this year in that space in a way that I probably would have quit already if I was still in road or triathlon. I don't know. I'm not sure, you know, like what I make the cutoffs and all the scenarios that are out there. And now it's almost like, oh, the sky's the limit. Keep exploring, keep pushing the edges a little bit and see what's possible. So,
yeah. And same thing for me, as well as I think I enjoy the adventure travel part of it.
The travel. Going to these cool places.
Yeah. I mean, being in remote monasteries, in Nepal, where you really can only get there on foot.
Exactly.
Getting to spend the night there but wonderfully generous people who are, they're maybe a little reserved, but that's just like they're shy because once you get to know them and they realize that you're there to see them and they can become, they're wonderfully gracious and open people. We got to experience incredible services. I don't know if the right word, services, ceremonies, I guess is the right word.
Yeah. Rituals.
Rituals, a burial ceremony that, you know, obviously does not happen frequently at all. We got to see that and all those incredible experiences that happen along the way with the adventure travel being in wild places. I think as I've gotten older, it has become even more and more of interest to me.
Yeah. And you know, I work for Racing the Planet. So that's basically what we do is we put on stage races around the world in really outrageous, fantastic places. But I will say also, I was just in Africa couple months ago now, that the human beings, the local human beings that were helping us put this mm-hmm. event on in a safe, and you know, it's really critical yeah. that you have locals, and you were going to talk about mm-hmm. this with your own company, who understand the space, and that you're very integrated into not only the cultures and the culture and the rituals and all of those things, the nuances to where you are traveling, but feeling safe and then really having an experience with them in their country that is like, there's nothing like that mm-hmm. to understand your place in the world. Yes. Like you said, for your girls, right? They were born in Mexico. And so one of the greatest gifts was they understand what it's like to be a global citizen.
Yes.
And so when you travel on these adventure travel experiences, and you've built your company off that, we're going to talk about it. I mean, this is really you embracing yourselves as a whole global human and then humanity that's out there and understanding more about yourself and others than you can ever imagine. And over the course of 3, 4, or 5 days, you really get that experience. Yes. It's not like going to Hawaii and they're doing a luau on the beach and you're sitting there drinking your Mai Tai. It's right. not like that at all. It's literally you are immersed in their culture and yes. in their beautiful spaces, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about that, because at some point you decided, I don't want to do this desk job anymore.
Right.
I got to get busy with, you know, what my life passion really is. When did that happen? What did that look like?
It was a year ago.
Okay.
So just December 3rd is our Top Out Adventures anniversary.
Woohoo!
So, you know, I got off the corporate treadmill, you know, in transparency. It wasn't like the, you know, step to the side and go. It was more like you stumble and it's going too fast and you fly off the back of it, kind of exit off the corporate treadmill.
Yeah.
But, you know,
that happens, really, especially yeah. during a pandemic. A lot of that yeah. happened.
Yep. And so it was just really an opportunity to assess what I really want to be doing, what mm. fills my bucket, and what is rewarding to me and in ways that I can give. And, you know, if you were to ask me, so what do you want to do with your time? Well, I want to go to really cool places, do cool things with cool people.
Yes, please.
Yeah,
more of that.
More of that. So, you know, how do we make that into a job? And it really kind of, that was the inspiration, and it's shaped a lot since then into what it is as Top Out Adventures. But, you know, and we tried it out with some stuff that, you know, some more intimate trips with people that were already friends and could give us great feedback on how things were going and what we do. But we also take that operational background that I have, which is as a planner.
Yep.
You know, and say, okay, what are all the things we need to think about? All the boxes that need to be ticked. We'll take care of all that, from permits and meals and lodging and all of the details, and combine that with the love of going to cool places with cool people and doing cool things. You know, that's what Top Out Adventures does. And that's why our all-inclusive trips are something that I would want to do anyways. And so finding like-minded people and making it happen is what we're all about. And so, yeah, that was just a year ago. It's amazing. I had to look up the date just last night. I was like, God, it's been a year. Oh, yeah, December 3rd.
So yes. good. So good. So you left corporate. You decided mm-hmm. to start your own business.
Yep.
And you have this deep background in operations, logistics, you know, dealing with humans on big scale, small scale, all scales, mm-hmm. all of that kind of stuff. And then this very personal experience with you and your family around the love of nature and being outdoors. And so when you decided to launch Top Out Adventures and build the company, what model have you decided, and where is it going? So like, how did it start? It started off of these 1 or 2 trips with friends.
Yep.
How are you deciding where to go and how many days, and you know what that really looks like? What's the structure?
Well, we get a lot of great suggestions when in any conversations I have. Do you go here? You know, you get there. I got a message the other day from somebody in Utah who wanted to go horseback riding and thought we did it. But it's just lots of little things like that. Have you been to Utah? Have you been to Zion Canyon? Do you do the Grand Canyon? All these kind of things. So we definitely listen to those and take those and integrate them. And one of the most fun parts of the job is scouting.
I know, the creation, the R&D. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are places that, you know, we think have enough potential. We go and we gather as much intel as we can. A lot of times we hop in my van and we drive out there and we start figuring it out. And we had a great, so we're going to Mexico next year. And we had an incredible scouting trip with my friend Chris last year. And, you know, we had incredible experiences where we found a trail race. We found it had a fit ultra trail race. And we met Eric Palafox, who's now our local partner for this trip. And, you know, and but there are also days when we got to a trail and it turned out to be a sidewalk in the middle of a town. Like, Okay. Well, where's the bar, you know, and, you know, or move on to another day and scrap plans and this hotel. And so those are really fun. And those are kind of how we decide what trips are the right fit for taking a group on. We've been in some places where, you know, we were in Mexico, we were in this, this trail that was, it was no trail. Mm-hmm. We were following GPX. It was gorgeous. It was one of the most majestic places I've ever been in Mexico. And we both got back to the car and we're like, oh man, we can't bring others here. We, you know, this is
it's bushwhacking. Yeah.
It's bushwhacking. Exactly. Uh-huh. But so we have everything in between on the scouting trips in order to hone in on what the right trip is for a, like, for a group.
Well, so two things there. One, to be clear, I think this is a thing. People can actually hire you to create their own experience. So yes. If you're a corporate group or some other type of group, friends, family, reunion, whatever the scenario is, and you want to do some cool thing for 3 days or whatever the number of days is, you will create that for them.
Absolutely.
Them and their people. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Well, and then the other thing is you're going out and you're curating these experiences, you know, so you obviously have a creative side to you because being an entrepreneur and being able to create something from nothing is a very creative experience. And with humans in mind,
yes,
right? Like the human experience is really what you are, you know, creating and curating. So it is a fun thing to think about doing that for a living. But then what I really deeply appreciate being a professional in this space too is like, this is a professional thing. We really understand that it needs to be a business and it needs to be sustainable, right? But it needs to be, number one, safe, because we are dealing with humans and all of the nuances around that. And so creating something where you can marry all of that together is really, you know, it takes talent. Not anybody can just be popping these things up. Thank goodness.
Yes.
So right now, you've got quite a bit on your itinerary for 2022, and I think you're even booking to 2023, right? Are you already taking bookings for 2023?
Yeah, we're going to put 2023 scheduled together right at the beginning of next year.
Okay. So tell me what's on the docket for 2022 right now.
So right now, we're going to be in Big Bend with the Pruitts. Two spots left if you want to go explore the trails with Samantha.
Yeah, let's go.
That's February 11th and 14th, and then we'll be there again in March. You mentioned kind of custom trips. That March is a group of people who kind of want to get together, and so there's definitely some custom components to that one. And we always stay in really the coolest places we can find. We're staying in a converted old miner's shack. And that's an understatement. She seems to have rebuilt the whole thing into these wonderful houses. And it's just, you're going to love it.
It looks kind of Spanish Hacienda when I looked at it. That's what it reminded me of, with the courtyard and all the things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So this is Big Bend National Park.
Big Bend, yeah, we're in the national park there.
Which is very privileged to be in the national park.
Yes.
Which, you know, No small feat. Good job getting that permit. Good job. Okay.
Yep.
And it's how many days? We're doing three.
That is 4 days.
4 days.
So we come in on a Friday, and then we have Saturday and Sunday going into the trails each day, and then we leave on Monday. That's in February, and then March, and then we're going to Mexico for trail running in April. That's the 3rd through the 9th. Mm-hmm. That one is going to be that's going to be high on the adventure scale with some of the best trails in Mexico. We're going to climb mountains behind, just south of the city of Monterrey, where you will have huge climbs and then majestic overlooks of the city. And then we'll have really good meals and very metropolitan experience. And then we will go to a small town called Mickeywana, where we'll stay in a very small bed and breakfast and have locals cooking meals for us and run trails that are just out of the back of town. And there's no trail sign on this. It's the local
only trail. Locals would know where these are.
Only locals. And our friend Eric Palafox is our local who will be guiding us when we're there. So that's in April. And then in May, we go to Nepal. And we will be in Mustang Kingdom. It is one of the most untouched places in the world. It wasn't open to the public until 2008, to the outside world.
Wow.
I got to go there in 2018 with my daughter, it was an incredible trip, but we're going to go trekking in Mustang Kingdom, as well as have some experiences in Kathmandu and, you know, dodge tuk-tuks and go to the incredible temples and experience Kathmandu. So that's going to be an incredible trip. Nepal is near and dear to my heart. You cannot go on that kind of trip and not come back changed. Then for the summer, we'll be in Colorado, in Leadville, Colorado. So those are, we have a house called the Ice Palace, right off of Main Street, where we stay. So we all stay in there. We have the house. We cook the meals. So it's great community aspect to it. And each day we go out into the mountains, and we have some awesome permits. The ranger district in Leadville for San Isabel, great people who've worked with us, and we have to give us permits that are get us to some of the highest places in the U.S. As well as some just beautiful trails, so we can customize a 10-mile day with little elevation to a 20-mile day with a ton of elevation. So, we, depending on the group, we can kind of shape it to what it is, what's needed.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And those trips are very rewarding. I get to, from taking somebody on the trails for the first time in the mountains, to just trying to stay a little bit ahead of some incredible fast trail runners who are, ascending mountains like billy goats. So everything in between. Then in the fall, we will be going back to Big Bend in the fall again. I haven't set the dates for those. And if we can get enough interest, we may go back to Nepal again in the fall.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So we got a lot planned both in the U.S. and internationally for next year.
I love it. Yeah, I would love to go to Nepal. I'm not available in the spring, but maybe in the fall. Depends when it is. I don't know. I got to survive that Moab 240 race. You might have to come out and pace me for that. So never mind you trotting off to Nepal.
I would love to.
If not 2023.
Yes. Will you just tell me when you're available for Nepal and also around you?
We're going. You know what I love about the diversity of your trips? Well, a couple things. I mean, really, the places that you're going are radically different from one another. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the dry desert experience. You have the high altitude mountains. Mm-hmm. Like that Leadville experience for people. What an amazing way to get in your high altitude training for your big fall mm-hmm. races, if you're racing yep. at altitude, if you're a trail runner or even a hiker.
Right.
That's what went mm-hmm. for me. I was like, oh, that would be a great training camp that I would utilize mm-hmm. for some other, fall altitude race or something like that. So that's pretty awesome. And then also, I love the idea of going to Nepal, of course. That just sounds freaking fantastic. Explain to me this. So as you know, all humans are incredibly unique. And part of our challenge collectively, humans like you and I, are getting people to understand what is possible for them. Right. So building environments, building experiences where they can step into that and say yes, and then show up and feel comfortable that they will be able to participate and finish and all of that jazz. So in varying degrees of fitness and capabilities, et cetera, how are you making that happen for all these unique people?
That is the most complicated part of my job, in making sure everyone is having an incredible challenge and not too much and everyone's safe. So a couple of things.
Well, we all have different thresholds for that. Yes. Right.
Yeah. So one thing, all of our guides are wilderness first responder or greater medical training.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So we can manage a group, and all of our groups are relatively small, 8 to 12 people.
That's really nice.
A couple pockets within a group pretty well without having to worry about, well, you know, the person with the med kit is 3 miles down the trail. We have what we need so we can separate out and manage groups that way. We have on our website, we have what we call adventure ratings. So you can kind of look at what is a trip is all about and try to describe that. And then we're always available for a conversation. And we will have, you know, those conversations never go in a straight line. You know, sometimes it's, well, somebody is saying, I ran 2 marathons last month and I'm going to do another 50, but I don't know if I can do your trip. Yes, you can do our trip. So sometimes it's giving confidence.
Yeah.
Then sometimes it's, you know, this trip may not be the best fit for you, but what about this one? And how, or here's a training plan. How do we work through this and work together?
Yes.
And so they never follow a straight line in those conversations. But at the end of the day, we are very committed to making sure everyone has a great time and importantly is as safe as they can be out there in these adventures, because I mean, if that's a huge burden on our shoulders, and that we proudly take that responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. We do that Racing the Planet too. We're willing to have the conversations with each of the individuals. I think it's really important because we are in a way coaching these humans. Are you not? Yeah. I mean, that really is a role that you're not just their guide, their adventure guide, but you're coaching them through an experience, a multi-day experience. And so building a relationship up front and the trust that must go into that. So by the time they show up, they do feel prepared, you know, knowledgeable, capable, and all of that. But then they already have a relationship to you. Yes. So let's say it does get hard, which it just might, people. It just might get hard. That's when the good stuff starts to happen. That's when the magic happens, right? When we are challenged beyond our comfort zones. Yes. So being in a space where you already have a relationship with your guide coach, and feeling like, hey, I got this, or I can work through this because I have the support that I need. So important. I actually don't know any companies that are doing anything like that, by the way. Good. So bravo. And I think building a company like yours based off of that kind of foundation where the human being is the top priority.
Yes.
Smaller events, smaller experiences, really custom curated almost, right? Like, let's see who's showing up.
Yep.
For example, if I show up to Big Bend and we're going to do 4 days, and I've brought with me 5 of my girlfriends who maybe are not trail or ultra runners like me, but they really want to have this experience with me, us together in a group. Mm-hmm. And I want them to have a taste for this lifestyle.
Yeah.
We need to adapt to that possibility that some of them are slower, some of them have some physical restrictions. Yep. I mean, that's also reality, you know, is that every human's going to come with their own bag of
mm-hmm.
goodness. Yes. And how can we make sure that they have the experience of yep. a lifetime?
Yeah. We have our tagline is explore your limits.
Your limits. Not the ones that we are imposing on you.
Right. Yeah. And they're all unique. But there is a experience that is just so accentuated when you are pushing yourself physically within the natural world. There's a place for the scenic drive up to the high pass and step out of the car. There's a place for that. And but I guess say that's not what we're doing. When you go out and you push yourself physically with that there's a natural experience, a very integrated experience when you are reacting and interacting with the environment around you, whether that's climbing, whether that's dealing with the terrain or the foot or the rain or whatever it is, that is just turns the gain to 11. I mean, mm-hmm. turn the volume to 11 but that doesn't have to mean you are out for 4 days doing something like the Moab 240.
It could. Yeah.
And for some people it is, and that's great. And for some people it's not. It's a 2-hour hike that requires a lot of effort and a lot of push individually. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing is both of those experiences are incredible. And that's one of the things I've had, you know, there's spots I know in the mountains where I can scurry up ahead and catch the first time somebody looks over a mountain and sees the other valley, and catch that on film on a camera is an incredible experience. And it doesn't matter whether that's their first time or their 100th time. Mm-hmm. It is always an incredible experience. And that's what gets me jazzed, is seeing people have that. And so that's why our tagline is that explore your limits.
Yeah. Hey, let's dig into that for a minute, because this is probably my favorite subject in the world, is the human experience when they are doing something that is, like we said, outside the comfort zone, or I say exploring your potential, or playing on the edges of what you feel to be what you're capable of. Because you and I both know that that is a preconceived idea that was either self-imposed,
right,
those limitations, or society and others imposed that on you. You are capable of this, you are whatever all the things are. When you choose to say yes to an adventurous lifestyle, an endurance-based lifestyle, you're saying, I want to see what else there might be for me, what is possible for me. And it's not just the physical experience. It definitely is the psychological, spiritual, emotional experience that comes with that moment, you know, that journey, whether it is the 2 hours going on a trail to the top of a mountain you've never been up before, or into a valley that you've never, or a canyon that you've never explored mm-hmm. before, or these type of things that you and I are talking about and so fired up about. So the human being who's in there doing the thing, mm-hmm. why do you feel that this is one of the most important moments in time that we are providing these experiences for humans? What do you think is going on now in our world where this kind of thing is more valuable and more important than ever?
Oh, I mean, here's my phone. Here's my
all the things, Dave, all the things
that are taking us to places that are taking away effort. And that's, I'm a geek. I'm efficiency. I'm all about doing things the most efficient way. Even when I'm out doing endurance stuff, like I'm light pack, I'm what's the best path. But there's just, when we go out and we are on an adventure and we are pushing ourselves, your cell phone's not going to get you up that mountain. Your, the YouTube video you watched, if you're watching this one, keep watching.
Hit subscribe.
Yes. Those are the things that are, you know, those are not actually going to get you up that mountain or through that canyon. And so these you know, in this world of digital convenience, the cool part is it accentuates that outdoor experience because it is so contrary to so much another part of our life, right? I mean, in 100 years ago, you know, going outdoors to do something was like normal. Well, the cool part is now it's a super cool, unique experience, but we also have to work a little bit to go get them. And so creating those opportunities is what we love to do so that people can go have those experiences. And they are so accentuated because they're unique. And that's definitely what gets us jazzed.
Yeah. And I'll add to that, that I think at this moment, I mean, we're slowly coming out of this global pandemic. Mm-hmm. We're still on the roller coaster, obviously, and we will be for a while. But so many people isolated themselves for safety and also just, you know, out of fear and out mm-hmm. of anxiety for what was happening in the world. And then politics went to hell in a handbasket. And we don't talk about politics on the show. So many things happened in the external world that people really kind of hunkered down on their internal worlds and locked themselves inside or found themselves in very small circles of groups, whether it was just family or even completely isolated yeah. from their normal communities where they yeah. were out in the world, going to a job, going to a gym, doing whatever the things were that were their life. Mm-hmm. Right. So all of that came to a big collective pause. And then we all kind of looked at each other and went, wow, this sucks.
Yeah.
And so many people, I believe, are still trapped in that space, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because that fear, anxiety, depression, isolation set in and yeah. it became a pattern. And mm-hmm. so more than ever in my lifetime, have I seen this moment as an opportunity for us to break this cycle. Not that the one that we're in now that was caused by the pandemic, but it was already happening before. Mm-hmm. And you saying the digital world and all the other things, that's kind of what was happening prior, right? Like we were already breaking ourselves down in these really, I feel, unhealthy ways where our world was being controlled by these external objects and phones and computers and what's happening outside of us and yeah. not really listening to ourselves, our own internal voices, our physical bodies. There was really a disconnect happening. I'm guilty of it also. You know, I was working way too much before the pandemic and not really spending enough quiet time in my own brain mm-hmm. and body to, you know, work through some stuff. Pandemic happens and then you do that just was exasperated.
Oh, yeah.
So more now than ever, I believe that we're on this path, people like you and I, to create these experiences where people mm-hmm. can break these cycles.
Yes.
And the first step is to basically say, hey, what I'm doing now isn't working. Right. Okay. My physical body feels like crap. My mind is a disaster. I can't focus. I'm depressed. Crap. I'm anxious, all the things. Well, you and I know from our own personal experiences as well that the outdoors and moving your body in the outdoor space is the easiest thing you can do to yep. change the chemistry within your body, which ultimately creates physical health and mental health. Mm-hmm. But getting this out into the world seems to be kind of a challenge, which is really fascinating to me, right? Yes. What are your thoughts on that? What do you feel that looks like for you and your team?
You're absolutely right. And I, you know, for the first part of the pandemic, I was, you know, still in the corporate world where I was doing everything through Zoom and didn't see people on a regular basis. I mean, we're all, well, you know, business on the top, party on the bottom in our pajamas. And, but, you know,
what you were doing happening? That before the pandemic when it wasn't even cool yet.
It wasn't
Check
even
you
cool.
out.
Yeah. But there's, you know, for a lot of good reasons in it. And again, I'm, you know, speak out of both sides of my mouth. There's a lot of good reasons, but also problematically, it's continuing. People,
yes.
companies are saying, well, we don't all have to be traveling all the time. Look at all we can save. Look at, you know, and work life. You're close to home. You can manage things. And there's a lot of good that comes with that. But one yeah. is what is a seeming to be an ongoing isolation from humans.
Yeah.
And that is going to, you know, that's the downside. So let's take the good side, which is the communication, the ability to communicate quickly and from anywhere, and also get the upside of getting out and going on an adventure. And it's now needed more than ever. And I think it's going to continue to be needed because there are so many places that are just continuing to have that work remote experience, which I've enjoyed the upsides. But we've got to fight against the downsides of that.
Yeah, I agree. And understanding that the outdoors are safe. It seems strange I have to say that out loud. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I have been a coach off and on for many years in my own journey because I'm so passionate about this kind of experience and how it transforms your life. And many, many conversations I've had a lot of times with women or with younger people are is that they didn't feel safe in those spaces. And I think that still is an ongoing conversation that we need to continue to have and to share with people that you will be safe out there. And even more important, you belong there, that you're welcome there, that we will ensure that you feel welcome and that you belong there and that you are safe in these environments. And so that's a big part of our shared passion too, is that like, let's level the playing field and make sure everybody mm-hmm. is participating in these things. And I know what you have created and what I do, they're not dude fests where everybody's got, you know, out there throwing down the gauntlet. I mean, it really is not those kind of environments that, that we care deeply about or that are really mostly what's out there, but that right. is the preconceived notion because right. that's what you have seen or witnessed or heard. Mm-hmm. So the outdoors is where everybody belongs and it is a safe place for us to rebuild our lives, our bodies, our brains, our community, our connection to not just each other, the community piece is huge, but to ourselves.
Well, the,
to ourselves,
the ourselves, the wonderful outdoors, the, you know, and I'll use the overused phrase, but Mother Nature, she doesn't care how old you are, how, what color your skin is, what your religious background is.
Your body weight.
Your body weight.
Yeah, none of it. How much money you make, doesn't care.
It doesn't care at all. And so, you know, that is a complete equalizer.
Yes.
That, but we have a significant imbalance in what is the perceived who belongs.
Yes.
And I'm really excited. We have a partnership with We Out, which is a adventure company that just, I got to meet Philippa, the owner, last year. I guess that was this year, but, and she just is great minds think alike in our, apparently in our business names. She is focused on getting particularly New Yorkers and people of color and people who haven't experienced, you know, simply urbanites who haven't had that chance to go, getting them outdoors. It has incredible hikes. Well, one of our trips, July 22nd to the 26th in Colorado, is dedicated to her and her group. So we're going to have an opportunity to bring some people who don't regularly or maybe never had the chance to experience the outdoors and the way we get to on these trips. I'm so excited to be able to do that with Lipa and her group. It's going to be an incredible trip and it's going to be, she has a phrase that I love, a hashtag. She calls it hashtag nature face.
Nature face.
And it's that you cannot stop smiling. You can't fake it. Experience that shows through your face when you have that, outdoor experience. And so we're going to have a lot of hashtag nature face going on, especially on that trip in Colorado, as we get to expose some people to the outdoors that just don't regularly get that.
So that's an example of you curating these group experiences for people, for every type of person.
Yes.
I assume if I came to you with a bunch of challenge athletes, for example, we could figure out how to curate a life-changing outdoor experience for them too. Okay.
We would love to do that.
I love it. The wheels are turning. Dee, 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 dee.
Yeah.
Well, this was so fun to chat with you today and tell everybody a little bit about not only who you are, but what the heck you're up to these days and how people can get involved in changing their own physical and emotional lives through these experiences, and then, of course, become part of this community. Tell us how they can find you, how they can find out more, and how they can find you, Dave.
Yeah, you can first go to our website, which is topoutadventures.com. And so it's all one word. And there you can learn about all of our trips and what we do, and our guides. And there are some blogs on there, some ramblings from myself and others on there. You can follow us on social, which is at Top Out Adventures, both Facebook and Instagram. So okay. We'd love to connect with you. And of course, you can always email us at info@topoutadventures.com. Because our trips are small, we get to have a lot of great conversations and a lot of great conversations that lead up to what is a perfect trip for individuals.
Top Out Adventures. I love that. And I will be seeing you in February. And if people want to hike, do some trails and mountains with me and Dave in Big Bend, Texas in February, come join us. There's two spots left.
Two. Yes.
Okay. All right. Yep. Fantastic. And let's continue this conversation, shall we? Because I think there's a lot more chapters for us to tell.
Yes. I'm excited. I look forward to exploring Big Bend with you. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate the time.
You bet, darling. Okay, everybody. This is it for Endurance Town USA, our episode, first episode in a new mini series on adventures and adventure seekers and the people who create these experiences for like-minded humans like us. So I can't wait to continue to tell the story, and I will be seeing Dave soon, and we'll be sharing that on social when I'm there. We'll do some fun stuff so people can, if they're not with us and they don't take these two spots that are left, so they can see and feel what it's like to be with you on one of these journeys. I can't wait.
Yep. All right.
Thank you, my friend. We'll see you soon. Bye, Thanks. Everybody.
Thank you for connecting with us for this episode of the Endurance Town USA Project. Discover more about today's guest, along with other great stories and video projects, by visiting us online at EnduranceTownUSA.com. You can also follow us for updates and behind-the-scenes peeks at future episodes on Instagram at EnduranceTownUSA. You can also connect with our creator, host, and life leadership and business coach, Samantha Pruitt, at SamanthaPruitt.com or on Instagram at TheSamanthaPruitt. And lastly, you can follow me, Travis Ford, producer and marketing creative, at RockHarborMarketing.com or Instagram at RockHarborMarketing. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time we go on an adventure to Endurance Town, USA.
Bring it back.